You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello and welcome to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Stop making all that damn noise. I'm trying to do something here and announce this third podcast. Stop it. Finally, I'm going to do a third podcast. I'm recording this on the eve of... Oh my god, I'm really going to screw you up.
Why don't you just like erase this and start over?
No, I'm not. Alright, so on the eve of Batman vs. Superman, the Dawn of Justice... This is the third podcast in a series of
podcasts
that I dedicated to Batman vs. Superman. Plus, now we're doing a exclusive one shot only, all on Wonder Woman.
With Wonder Woman herself, not
with any man. It's all about her.
Yeah, that's because men suck.
So the reason why I wanted to do this, because, you know, you and I were kind of prepping for this episode for a while. Oh, I'm starting to introduce you. Hi, everyone. I am the Monster. With me today is my wife, Jennifer.
Mrs. Monster.
Not to be confused with the Monster energy drink. Because we're already tired. But we did eat something like Hamburger Helper, which, you know, you don't really need to add me because it still makes a great meal. So, forget that sponsor. All right.
Yvonne DiCarlo and Fred Gwynn. Here you go.
There you go. All right. So, basically, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to talk about the introduction to Wonder Woman, if you don't know who she is. We'll do a little timeline. We'll do a break for an ESO podcast promo, which I'm going to be plugging another show. And when we get back after that, we'll talk about the various Wonder Woman live action series or attempts to portray Wonder Woman on the small screen, as well as talk about some undeveloped projects. And Jana's also going to be talking a great deal towards the end about books and comics that she has read, which is a lot more than I have. Right? Yes, okay. Mal. All right. So we just finished actually watching a quick documentary on Wonder Woman, on the animated movie version, which was like a 25-minute documentary, which gave great insight. Not that we didn't know as much, but it was kind of helpful to kind of refresh ourselves with who created Wonder Woman, which is Marston.
William Moulton Marston.
Moulton.
PhD.
Yes. Creator or hand in creating.
The polygraph machine.
Yes.
The lie detector. He was what they call the Dr. Phil of his day. He was a very popular psychologist who would bring young girls up from the audience and ask them little questions, and they would do a lie detector test on them just to show people how it worked. He was very popular. It was kind of like a sideshow act, so to speak. It was, he created Wonder Woman because he didn't like the fact that women like his wife, who were just as qualified as he was and who received university degrees just like he did, were given the shaft, basically. Right. They were not given the same opportunities as men in almost any which way or form. They are still paid less today, but that's another story. And so basically he created Wonder Woman as an empowering figure for women, for little girls, his daughters, to have somebody in the comics, somebody that they could look up to, somebody that would empower them. And so he created a story about a woman of mythology who had the strength of Hercules, the speed of Hermes, the beauty of Aphrodite, the wisdom of Athena. And originally, I guess they called her Suprema, but Sheldon Mayer, one of the people who worked in the comics changed it to Wonder Woman.
Which sounds much better as opposed to a name of a pizza from Pizza Hut. Suprema. I'll have the Suprema with extra cheese. Be extra Suprema.
Okay. Anyway, so the story was in most of the Wonder Woman time, I guess the timeline, was Hippolyta had was the head of the Amazons, and she could not bear children. In the Wonder Woman cartoon movie, she was raped by Ares and forced to give birth to his son, who was later killed in battle by her. And so in order to be able to preserve her dignity and to preserve the fact that she would not, I guess, be able to have a child of her own any other way, the gods granted her the wish for have a child in a different manner. She was told to create a child of sand and or clay, and they blessed this creature and they made it into a child, which she raised as Diana. However, just as Diana actually mentions in one of the comics, she herself is mostly what you refer to as a golem. And a golem was originally a creature created through mysticism and magic from the Kabbalah and Jewish culture, Jewish lore, for a creature that would be to protect the Jewish people from the antagonistics and the war and the prejudice of the people that were attacking them back in Warsaw and Poland years and years and years ago. And the golems have basically always been a creature made of, not of people, but of sand or earth or clay, and are often dangerous. They have no soul. They have no life. They have only what the person who created them tells them to do. And the same person who created them can uncreate them. But Diana refers to herself as a golem, but in fact she's so much more than that.
Yes, I agree. Ditto. That's why I have you on here.
Yes.
Because you know a hell of a lot more about Wonder Woman than I do.
Anyway, so the thing is that when he created her, he, just like one of the people in the documentary says, that he allowed people to believe in the gods again, I guess, in a way. The goddesses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, the wisdom of Athena, the beauty of Aphrodite, but Hermes. Hermes was not listed as a goddess, but a god. The messenger of the gods. The one with the winged feet who could deliver FTD Floris everywhere you want to go. And who's also the pretty much the avatar, so to speak, of the Flash.
Yeah, the Golden Age Flash.
With the little arrow things on the side of his head.
Mm-hmm. The helmet.
Well, that's in one of them.
Well,
he had the helmet.
But the FTD.
But even the Flash today had the little things on the side of his head, I believe, right?
Right, it's still similar to that. He has that kind of, but it's like a lightning bolt as opposed to the wings that he would have on the helmet for the Golden Age Flash.
Okay, right. And except for a small time period where she had, during the 60s when her powers were removed, because she supposedly gave them up for Steve Trevor. I mean, I haven't read it. I just heard about it. It was referred to as the I Ching or I Ching era.
Right.
Where she became a mortal. But she also learned how to live as a mortal. And she learned martial arts. And how to use weaponry, you know, mortal weaponry. Like machine guns and things like that. And she was a power to be reckoned with. So it wasn't, I wasn't crazy about the whole idea, but if you think about it, if women really want to be empowered, they're not going to be able to be a goddess or, you know, fall into a pit of nuclear waste and, you know, become some kind of giganta woman or get bitten by a spider and become Spider Woman and things like that. You know, they had to do what they had to do, which is what we can learn how to do, which is defend ourselves. So it's kind of an interesting idea.
Since you brought that up, in the first part of my three-part exclusive podcast...
Dun, dun, dun.
Josh was talking about how much he didn't like Superman because he wasn't someone that was relatable, because he was too much of like a god in which he has all these powers, but none of the weaknesses, none of the fallacies that, let's say, like he pointed to Spider-Man. He has flaws. He has problems. Spider-Man would be more relatable to him as opposed to Superman. And in some respects, and I guess maybe that's the reason why I'm also having the exact same problem, like within the comics, that she is a god. And for me to find something that is something I can find within myself, I really can't see myself saying, oh, I can relate because she's a god and I'm not a god.
Who? Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Wonder Woman's not a god.
No. But, okay. In other versions later on, we'll talk about the timeline in just a bit, she does get revert back or change into a goddess as opposed
to... Oh, that's a new 52. Right. But she was not... She's a
demigod. No, I know.
A demigod.
Right. But the problem lies in, I think...
Like Percy Jackson.
Exactly. Which I think it might be interesting is because she took away all her powers, is that she would make it more relatable because she is more like everyone else. So, granted, it wasn't the Wonder Woman that a lot of kids and adults mm-hmm. had read over the years, but I could understand why it was necessary to change that character to make her more identifiable, especially in the period when it came out in the 60s.
When women were fighting for their rights and trying to become more equal to men, which, right. you know, we don't really have to be because we're superior to men, but that's beside the point. What? Nothing to say? Okay, let me go on.
It's called, I can edit that out.
No. Okay, now.
You don't know how to do my podcast.
I don't care. I know how to shut off your computer.
I know how to pick your nose.
You can pick your friend's.
Not
you
my friend. I can pick my wife's nose.
Ew.
Ew.
Okay.
All right.
Let's not go there.
But it was interesting that Gloria Steinem
yes.
in the Ms. Magazine
oh, yes.
made out. Her... the icon for that magazine as a way of it, as a symbol for women to kind of, not so much rally around her, but oh. it was just more of, let's harken back to this woman that they all grew up with. Bring her back, so to speak, not from the dead, but bring her back the way that they remember her. And yes. she became that symbol all over again, in which she's wearing the red, white, and blue clothing as opposed to the... I guess Emma Peel outfits, jumpsuits, catsuits, whatever you want to call it, of that period. Yeah. So I totally get the whole symbol thing because when we were doing the commissioner's meeting, when we're rallying to save the library, I wore my Superman t-shirt underneath my regular shirt, and that was my symbol to gather strength. To be able to present myself, to talk about what I want to talk about, and I use that as my identity. So I can easily understand and relate to why Gloria Steinem would use Wonder Woman, because she is the embodiment of that strength, of that goal that we look to attain, even though it's maybe unrealistic, but it's something that you can work towards, and you can still have some of the traits be part of your everyday life. Except that you don't have a golden lasso. Yours is invisible. Right?
I have a golden lasso. I should just change into the form of a golden wedding ring.
Great. Precious. Nasty hobbitses. All right.
Trickses.
We forgot to also mention, and you brought this up, was that Wonder Woman is how old?
Oh, well, okay. Technically, according to... The new 52, she's only 23. But in all the other stories, she's many thousands of years old.
I'm talking about the character. She's 75
years old. Oh, the character. Yeah, she's 75 years old.
Yeah.
Yay. The diamond anniversary of Wonder Woman.
So she is the third part of Superman, followed by Batman. And now Wonder Woman, three of the oldest characters.
The Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity. Not the carrots... Green peppers and what's the other
trinity?
Onions, thank you. Not that kind of trinity. Cooking.
Okay, so she's part of the sofrito of the DC world.
No more laughing.
No more telling stupid jokes about food.
Whatever. All right. So after the 70s, they tried to do a live action, sort of.
60s.
No.
Yes. In 1967...
No, you're right. The day I was born. Not the day. But the year that I was born.
The year... Well, that explains why it was...
I was born the whole year.
That explains why it was stupid. Anyway. Okay. Now, what happened is the people who created the Batman TV show, the one with Adam West... what was his name again?
William Dozier.
Okay. Well, no. What was the name of the Boy Wonder again?
Bird Ward.
Bird Ward. Duh. Okay. I think we even met him. Anyway, so... The same people who created the Adam West Batman series tried to create a Wonder Woman version called Wonder Woman Who's Afraid of Diana Prince. It was hideous. Anyway, so the pilot was never actually aired.
Thank God.
They used Ellie Wood Walker as Diana Prince with a dysfunctional Jewish mother type woman to try to, like, you know, help her out with her life and things like that, and criticize what she ate and what she wore, and you know, why aren't you married kind of thing.
So if that wasn't bad enough.
And then the actual Wonder Woman person, which is strange. Okay, now she put on her costume, and I thought in the original story what they were going to do is they're going to show her looking at herself in a reflection and her dressed like Diana Prince seeing herself as Wonder Woman in the reflection, but that wasn't it. Ellie Wood Walker, dressed in the Wonder Woman clothing, looked in the reflection, but what she saw was Linda Harrison. And if you don't know who Linda Harrison is, think of the barbarian chick from the Planet of the Apes movies, who was much prettier. But, I mean, Ellie Wood Walker's not, you know, no slouch. I mean, she was pretty, too. But for some reason, she never saw herself as pretty.
She looked
at herself in the mirror, and she, you know, instead of looking like this, I guess, like, what frumpy, you said? Frumpy Wonder Woman, she saw this beautiful, svelte, you know, Amazonian type of Wonder Woman in the mirror thinking, oh, this is me. And she starts kissing, you know, making kissy faces. And it was just, it was hideous.
Oh, it was awkward.
Oh, and then so then she has to go out to go catch, you know, to help Steve Trevor, who's going to land in a really bad weather. And she, I guess they have a harness on her. So she goes flying with her legs kicking up in the air, like some kind of demented circus performer.
Okay. In fairness, Batman with Adam West... A lot of people, when it first came out, didn't appreciate Batman, that was a serious character in the comics, also portrayed in the serials, to be a cartoon buffoon. But
I still don't. I can't stand that show.
I know, but for me, I've grown to appreciate it for the campiness. And certain characters, you can do that with, to a degree. I don't see how in any way, shape, or dream that you can ever do this with a Wonder Woman character. She doesn't have something that, oh, I'm going to focus like they did on her beauty, and she's very vain, and she's not that beautiful woman that we know her to be. They were trying to play on those aspects, which never comes across as
being
funny.
It was offensive. I found it offensive.
Right, so she was just...
You know, because the thing is that they're making her out to be like this... little idiotic person, you know. When Wonder Woman to me is a great character. She's very strong. She's proud. She's, you know, she's
there's so
the
much
ideal.
More to her. She is. So, there was so much more to
she's
her.
She's the ideal of what women should do.
Right.
What,
and, or but they focused this little nugget on this character, and that's who she summed up to be. This
person. It was offensive. Anyway, I was just thinking about that too, because, you know, trying to incorporate the female into the character. Mm-hmm. I don't really think of it too much at all as a woman. You know, I just see, you know, her being this great person. But when they mentioned it, the thing with William Marston is the fact that he added these little details to her when he created her. That if he was going to create this beautiful woman, but he also gave her attributes that a woman would have, which is jewelry. The magical implements were basically jewelry. The golden lasso, like a bracelet or something. The tiara, boomerang tiara. The bracelets. And even the earrings. In the story, they could receive telepathic messages. In the Super Friends cartoon, she could use them as a communication device. In the later cartoons, they don't use them at all except for decoration.
Right.
But it is kind of interesting, too. They also, I seem to remember seeing something about a tiara, like if she touches the star or the... the star of the tiara, that would do something, too, but I don't know what it was.
Wasn't that Mighty Isis?
No, I saw something with Wonder Woman where she touched it and it did something. That's why I thought it was interesting.
Okay. All right, so that being never happened from our imagination, unfortunately, it still is there. 1974 comes around.
Cannot be unseen.
It cannot be unseen. 1974 comes around, and I remember this being even more disappointed. And this was the first real serious pilot version of Wonder Woman with not Linda Carter that we all knew and grew up with, but someone named Kathy Lee Crosby.
Well, Kathy Lee Crosby was a athlete.
Right.
And she was a great tennis star and things like that. And athletes were themselves kind of considered, you know, gods and goddesses in a way. I mean, they had a lot of popularity, even the, you know, just like they do today. I mean, you know, you would see all these, you know, famous people doing their little TV spots or doing movies and
like
things
Michael
like that.
Michael Jordan, Space Jam.
Michael, yeah, well, yeah, but Michael Jordan actually has talent. You know, or just like
Kurt Warner and Gymkhana.
Oh, shut up. What the movie and Trainwreck?
What about Trainwreck? Oh, LeBron.
LeBron. LeBron was great in
Trainwreck. No, actually, LeBron was really good.
He was very good in that. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, who can actually connect into that, like The Rock.
Yes.
You know, going from wrestling into acting and everything like that. Maybe not everything he touches is gold and everything, but he does a really good job. I mean, Jesus, he was Barack Obama. That was a freaking best Saturday Night Live episode I've ever seen. Anyway.
So getting
Kathy
back
Lee
to
Crosby
her.
Became Wonder Woman, I guess, because she was a very popular figure at that time. And because she was athletic and everything. They probably had... If they had somebody who was a little bit more... like Flojo or something at that time, they might have chosen her instead.
Yeah.
But
and I don't even think that it would be so much that she wasn't attractive or she wasn't, like, in the right costume. It was just that she just couldn't act. And it was just very blah to begin with. So you didn't really see, like... And you haven't seen the movie, but I have, and just doing this from my memory. I don't remember them seeing that invisible jet or any of the trial by combat, anything like that. I just remember just being bored, even at a young age in 1974, which was, what, 4, 7 years old? I remember this, like, this sucked.
Wow, I was only 3. You're old.
Shut up.
Anyway... the thing is that, like I said, I don't think it was as much as she can't act. It's that, you know, a person can only do so much if they have, like, a horrible script and horrible direction and
no,
things
I know.
Like
it
that.
Was horrible
I
mean, to be
all Because
around.
She was actually, she's done more than just this.
No,
you know, she's actually been in other things, so she couldn't be that bad.
No, it's just, you know? This was not a good production. Even though I had Ricardo Montalban and his rich Corinthian leather chair, it could not save this mess.
I love Corinthian leather. Anyway.
Shut up. All right. So, thankfully, and again, she was more like a secret spy, like from the 70s-ish. Not the one woman that we know.
Yeah, she didn't have, like, powers or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, it's by the script and whoever created it.
She did have
really
the power
fault.
To suck. So,
oh my god.
And it sucked really
You know
what?
Leave her alone. It's not her fault.
All right. So moving on to 1975, we finally get
Linda.
Linda Carter.
Linda Jean Cordova Carter.
Who knew she was an immigrant?
Her mother is of Spanish and Mexican and French descent, and her father was Scotch Irish.
Which we call her a mutt.
I'm a mutt. You're a mutt. Everybody's a mutt.
You're a mutt.
Unlike political people out there, we're all immigrants.
Exactly. So finally, we have a true Wonder Woman.
Hispanic Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we have actually two versions of Wonder Woman. The first year by ABC set this timeline back in World War II. And then after that, CBS picked up the next 2 years, but moved Wonder Woman to present day storyline.
Yep. They jumped the shark.
Well, I wouldn't say they jumped the shark.
I would.
But what are the things that, this is going kind of back to the comic book in 1985 with George Perez, because he wrote a lot of her books. I had asked him in a convention. It was kind of like a dick to me when I asked him a question about...
Yeah, let's not get into libel now.
No, but it was just more like, when I was asking him about the whole situation with Josh Whedon, which we'll talk about later, if he, George Perez, had the option to put Wonder Woman in a movie, which setting would he put her in? The past and then World War II setting or in the present day? So, since his storylines and all like the Infinity Crisis that he did in the comics were more present day, it kind of makes sense to do that. And the only reason why I bring this up, because there was something that I commented on Facebook the other day, in which Doc Savage, do you know of that character?
No.
Okay. Doc Savage is kind of like a pulp action hero that, much in the vein like the Phantom and John Carter and Shadow.
Like Pulp Fiction.
Right. So it's one of those situations, and I commented to the fact that I'm wondering if that's the reason why, like, the period piece for Wonder Woman went from World War II to present day, because the audience would not find it that much interesting because it's not right now. Do you think that's an issue?
It's possible. I mean, and she did fine in the 1940s setting, but I mean, there's just like so much you can do. You know, when you're dealing with the 40s, you know, you have a lot more restrictions on you.
Right.
And the funny thing is that her being in the original story, she she took Steve Trevor home, you know, in his unconscious state, you know, being recovering from the plane crash, and she had to, in order to be able to watch over him and everything, she had to pretend to be a nurse, and that's where she ended up being Diana Prince, or Prince Diana Prince, the nurse. She kind of took somebody else's identity. However, in the newer ones, you know, the ones that they have out, you know, not the new 52, but in the more contemporary Wonder Womans, they had her as part of the Department of Metahuman Affairs. And, you know, she was helping them, you know, fight crime that way. And she looked, you know, not exactly similar, but she looked kind of like the Diana that worked for the, what was the name of the agency that she worked for?
Oh, I forget. That stupid quiz that was on Facebook.
We did a
Facebook
quiz from MeTV, and we failed it.
No, well, I answered it because it just sounded right, but that was just like a pure guess. So I forget
well,
what
anyway,
it is.
So like the government agency that she worked for when she wore the jumpsuits with the long ponytail
and
the
funky stupid rover
and the big
robot
sunglasses and stuff like that, you know.
So, yeah.
So, you know, it was similar. Anyway, I think I totally lost control of the question.
That's okay.
That's good.
All right, so it had a good successful run. Let's kind of jump ahead to 2011. You saw this recently, in which we watched the Adrian Pilecki, in which David E. Kelly, who had done Ally McBeal, if you ever know what that is, you're just as old as I am, had wanted to do Wonder Woman story. We finally get that pilot to be done, and I thought it was fantastic.
It was really, really, really good.
And
if you don't know who she is, she's the one who plays...
she's Mockingbird on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
Bobby Morse.
Yeah. Which, again, I'm only watching that because it's more like a pity watch. It's not a great series right now, and it's okay.
Okay, we're getting off topic.
I know, we're moving
Wrong comic area.
All right. Okay. So, that was never picked up by NBC. And
that was
like,
really good. It had Cary Elwes in it. The guy from Princess Bride.
Yeah, and even Elizabeth Hurley. So, yes, all around, I thought everyone was really on their game. And I liked the fact that it was like a present-day Themyscira Industries, which was like kind of like Tony Stark. She's head of a company. Everyone knows who she is, but she also is in charge of her identity. Like the whole branding of the toys. Which I thought it was interesting, that whole meeting. It was something about this, like, I don't look like the toys that they're marketing. And it's like, but you approve this, you know? So it was kind of a weird dynamic because, you know, we think of Wonder Woman as this sex goddess almost in that tight outfit.
Sex goddess?
Yes. No, no. Remember in the dialogue in the meeting, she was like, I didn't approve of any of these toys to look this kind of buxom. It's like, I didn't market my tits to be like this, you know. So she was kind of commenting on everything that
Well, that's because it's like what my friend would call, you know, all the comic people out there with the, you know, triple D's and the butt floss costumes.
Right.
I mean, couch potato wet dreams. That's basically what it is. Because they are not given... It's just like I was watching Dancing with the Stars the other day. And I was just telling my son, who didn't care anything about what I was saying because they just needed to spout it out. Because he's 9 years old and he doesn't care about this kind of stuff. But I was upset because the thing is, I realized it's just like with this, all the women are wearing these skimpy little outfits that leave little or no to the imagination, while the men are completely fully dressed from head to foot. So how is that fair? It's exploiting the women. Same thing with Superman. Superman's completely covered up. Batman's completely covered up, you know, except for muscle definition and, you know, like, you know, some kind of nice little...
It's like showing
red underwear, you know.
Yeah.
They're completely covered up. While the women, Wonder Girl, you know, boobalicious, you know, Wonder Woman popping out. Everybody popping out, you know. At least in Marvel comics, yeah, they cover them up. But, you know, whatever. It's like painted on stuff. It's just annoying me. Okay? So, that's it. Anyway, the Erdene Palicki was, she was all covered up, pretty much. For the most part, she was wearing, like, tights and stuff
like
that.
Well, she was wearing different outfits.
Yeah.
Which is something that we've never seen before, other than Wonder Woman spinning around and jumping into different outfits.
Well, she had to, like, do one for, like, a motorcycle one.
Motorcycle, the skateboard.
And then she had one where she was swimming, you know. So that means she had to spin around twice.
Twice.
Okay? It's not easy doing that.
Yeah.
Without falling over.
So, again... I thought it's a shame that did not take off, but it is what it is, and we move on from there.
Yes.
So, in 2002, they were trying...
2014.
No, 2012. I'm sorry, 2012, sorry. Warner Brothers was trying to produce the Amazon series, which was, I guess...
From the CW. I couldn't find any information on that, so you found something?
Yeah, well, basically what they wanted to do, this is right before The Flash really hit and Arrow really was on the map... was to have another series, which later on supposedly would fit within the Arrow universe, but that has been, like, on hold forever. So it's unlikely at this point, considering that now Amazon is not going to be part of any universe, since we have Wonder Woman now on the big screen with Batman versus Superman, and then in about next year, she's going to have her own movie. So now, the other thing that kind of ticks me off, and they mentioned this before, was that DC was going to have separate universes. They were not going to be connected, so it would be, in theory, the multiple universe concept. So you can have Wonder Woman on the small screen, and then you can have Wonder Woman on the big screen, and the two of them would not be connected in any way, but that was okay. Unlike MCU, where everything had to be connected, you weren't restricted by DC. But recently, DC had killed off some characters on Arrow, which are going to be appearing on Suicide Squad. So now the idea and the rumors are coming about that Flash may also be cut because of Justice League and his spinoff movie later on in a couple of years. So, in any case...
Speaking of Suicide Squad...
Yes.
The one of the people that are in the was newer Wonder Woman's before they switched over to the new 52 was Tim Tressler, and Tressler is part of the Suicide Squad, but he was also the man that Diana chose to be her mate.
Okay.
So she tried to do the traditional Greek or Amazonian mating thing with him, you know, giving him some kind of a necklace and give him, you know, different types of things, you know, because she was the aggressor.
Right.
But considering she didn't actually love him, and, you know, it kind of fell through when she had to deal with, what was this, like, character called?
Sounds like spaghetti.
No, it doesn't sound like spaghetti. It sounds like...
Five Nights with Freddy.
No.
I don't know.
It's like... I forget her name now. Genocide.
Genocide, okay.
Genocide, which is the character that was created actually as an amalgam of people like Ares, and who had the power of a god, but it was a destructive force that only wanted to kill and destroy, specifically Wonder Woman, and it was trying to destroy and kill everything that was about her, no matter what she did. And it almost succeeded, but one of the things it did is it had the golden lasso, which was something that technically only she should be able to hold, woven through its body. And when she got it, it wrapped it around Wonder Woman and made her tell the truth. And the truth was, she didn't love him.
Okay.
She wanted to be with him anyway, but she didn't love him. And so that kind of ruined things for that. So, once again, all alone.
Okay. All right, so for right now, we're going to stop the podcast at this moment. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to do the promo for the ESO podcast, which is part of the ESO network, since it's by the same person that created the network. So when we come back, we'll talk more about Wonder Woman, about the comics, and the books that my wife has been reading, because she knows a lot more than I do, like I've said already. And a couple more things before we end this podcast. All right. Right back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never, ever listen to the Earth Station One podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station One podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
All right, so we're back with the Monster Sci-Fi Show. Thank you for sticking with us to talk about Wonder Woman. And you're listening to Wonder Woman. So I'm going to ask my wife a question.
Bum, bum, bum.
How much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck would? All right. Being that Wonder Woman is part of the Trinity.
Yeah.
Superman has been brought to the screen many times, big and small.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Batman.
Yep.
Why do you think Wonder Woman is such a problem to be able to be done the exact same manner?
I honestly don't know. Probably because people are stupid. I mean, think about it. There's been many women over the years who basically embodied Wonder Woman. And not just, you know, like, just in even in looks, if nothing else. I mean, there's plenty of actresses who had the right body and build for her. Even Olivia Munn, even though she doesn't want to hear it, you know, because she did that book, like, Wonder Woman Can Suck It or something.
I know.
Which I didn't read, so I can't say anything. Anyway, like, say, Lucy Lawless playing Xena. Even though she was Wonder Woman in voice in one story. She was Wonder Woman. And she was Greek. She was a fighter. She could wield a sword. She could wield her armor. She was what Wonder Woman should have been in real life in the stories. But of course they didn't do that. And Adrian Palicki did a really, really, really good job. Linda Carter is everyone's ideal as Wonder Woman. Even in, like, she was in the movie Sky High.
Yes.
Playing the Comet. And at the end, like, one of the last things she did when she was leaving the bad kids in the detention area is, like, you know, it's like, I'm not Wonder Woman, you know, just...
Right.
But it's... I don't know. I don't know why it's taking them so long. why it's so easy to put out the Batman movies, why it is so easy to put out the Superman movies, you know, or the cartoons or whatever. I honestly don't know. Wonder Woman who appeared in the Super Friends, Wonder Woman who appeared in the Justice League and then the Justice League Unlimited, she was freaking awesome. The Wonder Woman who appeared in the other cartoon movie that came out was 2009?
I think so, yes.
That was freaking awesome, too.
Right. But there's only been one of her movies. No, I'm saying there's only been one of her. Whereas there's been tons of stories of Superman and Batman and one of Wonder Woman. Even though she is in other things, part of, like, the Justice League.
Yeah.
She's not by herself. And she's been around for a hell of a lot longer than any other character. But she does not get her just desserts. So hopefully with this...
Technically she's been... Except for, like they said, a brief hiatus in the 80s, which I'm not sure what that was all about. Mm-hmm. They said that she has been continually published since 1941. So that's pretty freaking amazing. You know? And the funny thing is, think about it, they never had to kill her off. They've killed off Superman. They practically killed off Batman, but they never killed off Wonder Woman.
No, but let me ask this question. Now that you brought that up, that's a good point. One of the things that got me out of the comics was that collecting became, one, too expensive. It all became about, you know, the variant covers and the gold foil covers, and it was like it was nothing about the comics anymore. But the death of Superman got me back into comics.
Yeah, it got a lot of people back into comics. And, that was the point.
Right, and Nightfall
series. That was the jumping the shark period of the comics.
Well, I want to say that's really jumping
the shark. It was the jumping the shark. They killed him off on purpose to raise comic book sales. No, you know that.
No, listen. The point here was that if they were going to kill him off.
Yes.
Okay.
Which they did.
For almost a whole year, the character was dead. Gone. That's fine. But as we know, with other titles and other heroes, they get killed and then they come back.
Miraculously.
Unfortunately. So, I don't see any kind of storyline, any big storyline for Wonder Woman. They've done it for Green Lantern, which it had the multiple rays of colors of different rings. Even Flash had the Flashpoint Paradox. Mm-hmm. But nothing on the caliber of Wonder Woman having this grandiose story like every other male counterpart. No one has ever done anything like that.
What do you mean? You don't read the Wonder Woman comics.
No, what I'm talking about, when you have like a summer event where you have a crisis, like Crisis on Earth, on Infinite Earths, mm-hmm. something that goes on for several issues across many different titles.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman doesn't have that kind of reach by herself, like what happened with Superman with Doomsday, like what happened with Batman and Bane. You don't have something that's going to be of that caliber that really changes a lot of the other comic books around her.
What do you mean?
Like, if I drop a pebble, and you have a shockwave.
Okay, ripples. Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
You don't realize that she killed somebody, do you?
That's not the point. No, that's not what I'm saying.
She was kicked out of the Justice League.
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is to you is that a single thing that focuses on Wonder Woman, that is as big as those other male counterparts, that's what I'm talking about. Within her books, that's one thing. Outside of that, I don't see the exact same level of interest in which if someone stopped reading comic books, they were like, oh, I gotta read this because of what had happened with Wonder Woman. I don't see that.
So the death of Superman created a whole slew of changes in the Wonder Woman comics and in the Batman comics?
Well, if they were in...
I don't think so.
Well, okay.
You're just like going back... tracking on what you just said.
No, what I'm talking about, if you're going to tell a story of a major character, something like you would lose the character. Okay, like, how many times have we saw the reboot of the 52s over and over again, which amounts to nothing? How many times do you keep rebooting the exact same character, which amounts again to nothing? So if I don't see something that is as appealing as what the death of Superman happened, or Batman, or what happened with, again, Green Lantern, or The Flash, or the Paradox storyline, I don't see that with Wonder Woman that I can say I have to now get back into reading Wonder Woman.
So, did you ever read Wonder Woman?
Then I'm going to leave it to you to tell me.
You ever read Wonder Woman?
Yes, I have. I'm actually reading the first one right there.
Yeah.
The Blood Cup, the Blood Book.
Great.
Okay.
I've read them.
I know. So this is your opportunity to tell me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, nothing. Don't say my name out loud. Your opportunity to read. Tell us. Tell me.
I'm not going to tell us because I'm sure there's other people who have read more than I have.
Well, you can say this is what you're reading.
Oh, jeez. Okay, fine.
Stop saying my name.
Shut up. Hold this.
See? You have to boss me.
Whatever.
All right. So in preparation for this, these are some books that you have been reading, books you have read.
And books that I own.
Books you own. Books that I bought and dropped.
Okay. Now, my personal books that I own. Okay. The Wonder Woman, Rise of the Olympians, where she basically, Hippolyta has been usurped by a new god that was created by Zeus when Zeus came back. Because they weren't, you know, Zeus, it seems like they were out on some kind of space mission or something. And they came back and, you know, they redid everything. They weren't happy with the way the world was looking, that Wonder Woman had her chance to do what she needed to do, and blah, blah, blah. And this is introducing Genocide, who basically almost killed Diana in the first place. She was able to destroy Genocide, but that was that was after Genocide almost destroyed almost all of her friends. And then she pledged herself to a different god. I don't remember the name of this god, but he was a god of the islands, and he rode around on a shell, and Zeus killed him and took his heart. And it created Achilles, who was supposed to be Wonder Woman's mate. Of course, she didn't like that idea.
Who is the author for this book?
It is Gail Simone. Gail Simone.
Yeah.
Aaron Lopresti and Bernard Chang.
Okay.
Now, that's one. You know, this is when the old Wonder Woman, when she was still, you know, a creature made of sand. Also, Greg Rucka created Mission's End, which has to do with Max Lord and his control over so many things in the world, including Batman, Superman. He created a way to control Superman's mind, which almost caused him to kill Batman in the first place, and Wonder Woman. And this was done by a man by the name of Max Lord. And when she put the lasso around him, and she said to him, "How can I stop you? What will make you stop?" And he said, "Kill me. That's the only way." And she did. And there's a creature by the name of Brother Eye who watches everything that she does. And, of course, it was creative editing, just like happens a lot. The creative editing showing her snapping his neck. But it doesn't show what happened before then. So, of course, the thing is that Batman and his views of things and Superman basically could not, you know, they turned their backs on her because she killed a man. But the way they saw it, that she killed a man, an innocent man.
Right, outright.
But Max Lord, outright. But Max Lord was anything but innocent. She has a lot of other enemies in here, like Cheetah, Dr. Psycho, Giganta, who was actually inhabited by Veronica Kale. And, you know, then, of course, Brother I created these things called Omteks, which are people that have been converted into these mindless machines that are killing machines. To the point where Themyscira, she was the ambassador of Themyscira. But because of the violence and the horrible things that have happened, Themyscira has removed itself from existence. It's moved itself from our known existence back into whatever dimension it came from.
Their planet has existed. Okay.
So there is no more there is no Paradise Island. There is no more Themyscira. It's gone. And it's where she can be, but not now.
Okay.
And that was that part. There's another really good one called, I think, Helikitha, something like that. It's about this girl who had killed somebody, and she put herself on Wonder Woman's mercy, which was, you know, she performed the ritual, and woman protected her. Unfortunately, of course, Batman is trying to get justice, and it didn't quite work for him. If you ever see, like, a picture of Wonder Woman...
stepping on his face. Yeah.
Stepping on Batman's face. That's the thing. Okay, now... I'm reading the 52 because, you know, why not? Just to find out what's going on with this. There's also, this is the old Wonder Woman. I'm not going to go into that right now. So, the ones that's available through the library, I have Wonder Woman, the new 52, Wonder Woman Volume 1 Blood, 2 which Guts, 3 Iron, 4 War, and 5 Flesh. And basically the major premise in this is the fact that this whole time Hippolyta actually lied. Hippolyta did not create Wonder Woman as a golem made out of sand. She was actually created out of an affair with Zeus. And Hera, being her patron goddess, was furious and being lied to. And do you want me to tell you? Because are you reading it?
I'm reading the first one.
Okay.
So I read the first book, which I thought was kind of interesting, just because what was going on with Hermes being nearly killed. He was trying to save that woman.
Yeah, Zola.
Zola.
Okay, so Zola is carrying another one of Zeus's children.
Right.
Zeus needs to keep his pants zipped. He's the one. He caused a heck of a lot of problems. Okay, so that's the comics. Now, I own also the DK, Dorling Kinsley Wonder Woman, The Ultimate Guide to the Amazon Princess, Ray the Party, by Scott Beatty, which is, you know, I've had this one for many, many years. And, you know, talks about her, you know, where she was born, talks about all the people that she's connected to, talking about all of her, the characters that she lives, loves, dies, all this stuff.
Which I'm sure will come next year. They're going to have to update that.
And they have a timeline up here, too, in the back. But they talk about mostly
comics.
The comics, not anything else, not the other mediums that she is involved with.
Right.
But it's a very good read.
Right, so it's similar to like what we'd have like for Superman or for Batman, the exact same way. It's like a good encyclopedia book. So, again, I mentioned that in the first podcast with the other librarians talking about which books to recommend for people who've never read or for kids who've never read any of those heroes to start with those kind of guides because that's a good introduction to learn about these heroes.
Yeah. So, Hiketia, that's the name of it. The Hiketia, which is, I guess, a Greek term for some kind of... not amnesty, but sanctuary.
Okay.
So anyway, so that's that. There's also DC Comics Cover Girls by Louise Simonson. There's one Wonder Woman, The Complete History. Which is by Les Daniels and art direction and design by Chip Kidd. And there's a foreword by Linda Carter in here too. Let's see. The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. And there's even a really cool new picture book, which kind of follows the story of the cartoon 2009 comic book, comic movie. It's written and illustrated by Ralph Cosentino. It's for ages 3 and up. And it says it's dedicated to William Moulton Marston, Harry Peter, and all the inspirational writers and artists through the ages who have kept Wonder Woman timeless. And to Linda Carter for so graciously bringing the Amazon Princess to life and keeping our family glued to the TV set every Wednesday night. And then also to his daughters. First published in 2011. So this is a children's picture book. Really cute.
Nicely illustrated.
Yeah. And then, of course, this has really not that much to do with it, but it is a book called Don't Look Down by Jennifer Cruzy and Bob Mayer. And in here, they have a lady by the name of Lucy Armstrong, who's a very strong female character. She's the hero. And J.T. Walker, who is the... J.T. Wilder, I'm sorry, who is the hero in this. And the reason why I talk about Wonder Woman is because the little girl, Lucy's niece, her name is Pepper. Pepper is short for Peppermint. She is... They become really connected or obsessed with Wonder Woman in this book. And to the point where, like, they have a little Wonder Woman party. And they get the comics, the Golden Age comics, where she's always being tied up. And they thought that was kind of interesting, considering she's supposed to be really powerful. And she's always tied up to really long things, kind of like phallic symbols. So, like, they thought that was interesting, too. Wonderwear. They bought Wonderwear. And, they sang a song called "We Are Amazons," or that's what I'm trying to find. I've been trying to find the information about it because I went to iTunes, I couldn't find it.
Oh yeah, if I find it before the podcast gets edited, I'll put it into the show as well.
Okay, so I didn't get a chance to go through this again because I love the story. I love anything Jennifer Cruzy writes, okay. But. I wanted to find a song, so maybe we could find it and we can put it in here. But
okay.
I know it's in here somewhere, the title.
All right. So the next point, I'm going to be doing this solo, which is talking about the undeveloped Wonder Woman projects. And then I'm going to come back and ask this final question. So let's begin with Joel Silver, who, for the most part, had control or the rights to make a Wonder Woman movie since October of 99. And he had tried to get... at one time, Sandra Bullock to actually play Wonder Woman. So that was kind of an interesting choice. But it kept changing directors and writers. And in 2001, at one point, Angelina Jolie was being considered. Beyonce, Rachel Bilson, Megan Fox, Elijah Dushku, and of course, Catherine Zeta-Jones were all really being considered. To me, it would have been interesting to kind of see Catherine Zeta-Jones, who looks more like the Linda Carter Wonder Woman that we all love. And but again, nothing came of that. And there was at one point Lucy Lawless, of course we know her from Xena. She was also being considered, but she didn't really want to do the role of Wonder Woman, only because she would want to play kind of a flawed hero. So Xena is actually the perfect character for her to do that. But in fairness to what she was saying, it does make sense and more for an interesting hero that has that kind of situation. Whatever that flaw may be, it's better to have that as opposed to, like, again, referring back to the first part of the podcast trilogy, where Josh had mentioned that Superman had no flaws, or Captain America is a perfect superhero that has no flaws. So, in keeping with that, it does make sense that if Lucy Lawless did play, which she did do the voice for the Justice League New Frontier DVD, which, again, much more aggressive than any other Wonder Woman that I've seen today, but did a very good job on that. So, 2005, and we get the big news that Josh Whedon was going to be doing Wonder Woman. And if you know his work prior to, of course, the Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron, he was big on Buffy. He did Angel. He just had finished the Serenity movie, which was a big success, considering how many Firefly fans were out there in support of the franchise, or the 13 episodes that only aired once on the Fox network before it got canceled. So if there was going to be a director that understood strong female characters, this was the guy. And again, this is from 2005. So Joel was going to get him to direct and to write. It wasn't so much that he was not planning to write the actual screenplay. It's just he never got to finish what he had planned out. And basically what he wrote in the end was just a draft and not even a final draft to work on the screenplay. So the problem lies is that through creative differences, Josh walked off the project. And unfortunately, they were brought in new writers to come over and replace the work that he did. Now, it seems as if it was then another go with the studio because the new writers had planned to set Wonder Woman back into the period piece, back again, World War II. But he was only interested of holding on to the rights, not necessarily producing that version of Wonder Woman, because he said himself he did not care for a period piece. So again, Jen and I talked about this at length at the beginning of this podcast, in which, again, there might be that issue with audiences and period pieces. So maybe it's a kind of a good thing that, you know, again, when I see Wonder Woman in the Batman versus Superman movie, I will feel kind of justified that that's the action they needed to do. And then again, when we go into the Wonder Woman movie, then go ahead and talk about the past and make that be her backstory. But again, you don't need to make that Wonder Woman backstory available up front. There are plenty of people, and you have to trust the audiences that know who Wonder Woman is. Granted, you may not know her full history, and there's been revisions to that history, but let's trust the audience to go along with the ride. So let's go to 2007. Now we get George Miller. And if you know who he is, he's the one that directed the last Mad Max Fury Road movie. And at one time, he was going to do a full-on Justice League movie called Justice League Mortals. But the writer strikes were coming, and it was under the wire that he had the cast, he had production begin, but because the writer strike happened, it shut down everything. So unfortunately, we had right now, I think recently just released, the actual stills in which the actress Megan Gale, who was going to be playing Wonder Woman, in her costume. Now, she is very exotic looking, very gorgeous to look at. The costume itself looks great as well, but as far as functionality, I don't see it working as well, only because of it's not so much the bottom part of the one piece that we see Wonder Woman in the comics and in like Wonder Woman in from Linda Carter, but it's kind of like a weird mix of skirt, but it's not really a skirt because you can still see the open side. So I'm not sure the kind of look they were going with, but it kind of reminded me of the Amazonia Elseworld figure, in which it's a weird version of that costume, but just done like you have to see what it looks like. But again, look up Megan Gale, G-A-L-E, to see the Wonder Woman costume. And again, it does look fantastic, but as far as practicality, it doesn't really, in my head, if you're going to update this character, what an Amazon woman would look like, I can do without that half of the skirt. It doesn't flow for me, so to speak. So, those are as far as a couple of points that I wanted to bring up in regards to the unproduced Wonder Woman projects. So, let's get back with Jennifer. Now I'm going to ask my wife the final question before we end this podcast.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum again. All right, so we know that Wonder Woman can pretty much have any man that she wants in the world.
Not necessarily.
Oh, please.
Hey, Tressler didn't want to be the boy toy.
Look, Wonder Woman, in my opinion, can have any man she wants.
Okay.
Okay. But we're going to limit it because of Batman and Superman as a movie coming out. Between the two. Now, we talked about briefly who she would pick. So, she would pick Batman or she would pick Superman?
Batman.
Batman because?
Well, okay. First of all, Wonder Woman, I don't know that she's going to ever be with anybody. Okay. Not because she's meant to be alone or anything like that. One, technically, unless she's like the daughter of Zeus, if she's a golem, she might not even be able to have children or anything like that, but that's beside the point. The fact is that she loves everybody. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she can ever have a real deep, abiding, like, want to love, be with this person forever, 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 you know.
She will be with everyone, right.
So, doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't mean that she's, you know, some kind of hoe or anything like that. But I don't know that she has, like, the ability to do that. But, I mean, in the stories and in the pictures, you see it. There's one that was called, it was some kind of an Armageddon story, The Age of Obsidian, which is a two-part one. And she, basically all the super friends were almost destroyed by magic. Well, no, they were destroyed by magic, but it took place thousands of years ago. Like, they were sent back. And that had to do with the taking over of Atlantis from Arthur. So what ended up happening is before, they were like the last two, even Superman was dead. Before they were to go away, before they knew they were going to die, Batman and Wonder Woman shared a really, 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 really passionate kiss. And to tell you the truth, I don't know that Superman, I mean, and Wonder Woman would have done that. Yeah, there's pictures of them floating in space, smooching, you know, really like wow kind of things. But in reality, at the end, Superman's all like, well, I'm just a simple farm boy from Kansas. And, you know, she was a much more sophisticated, exotic woman. And basically, he just felt that either one, she was out of his league, or he couldn't deal with her.
Right.
So that's the thing. So the way I see it is that she'll go for Batman anyway. Because there's a hell of a lot more pictures of her kissing Batman. Batman's a lot more interesting, in my opinion. If you're going to go by ice cream like you did before, Superman would be, you know, vanilla. Maybe even French vanilla, if you want to go there. But Batman would definitely always be super chocolate chip cookie dough. Or Rocky Road, or whatever it is your favorite ice cream is.
So you're saying that Batman will be a bat freak in the sheets?
That's disgusting. Okay. You know, I'm not going there. Thanks for making it gross.
No, but
you know,
I think
thanks for making it gross when I was like just going into this whole romance thing, you know. But yeah.
No, hey, but thanks, like you said, no, but like it, the animated thing, you know, he's a rich kid with issues.
Yeah,
lots of issues. So, and I think
and
that
one part I really love is like anybody he gets involved with, his enemies are going to find out and try to hurt her.
Right.
And then Wonder Woman goes, you know, takes the point of destroying a gargoyle on top of a building with her bare hands. And she's like, yeah, okay. Because, of course, anybody who'd go after Batman could definitely kill Wonder Woman. Not, if anything around that, you know. Wonder Woman's enemies might go after Batman.
Right.
You know, because he's the more vulnerable.
So, my two cents on this. When I saw the Justice League, when I forget which season in which they had to go undercover.
Yeah.
Diana,
this is when the Thanagarians were attacking.
Right. Diana and Bruce were together.
Yeah.
They made a great couple.
Yeah.
And it was very much so.
And
that,
all, but that's the thing. See, there's so many of them like that.
Right.
Okay, when they were kids, she was obsessed with, she was like always wanting to hang around with him.
Right.
She gave him kisses.
Yeah.
She made him feel embarrassed, you know, things like that. Okay. And then even Green Lantern is all like, it's like, well, your girlfriend's really bossy. And he's like, shut up. And then when Batman, Superman was like, you know, why do they do that? It's like, and then why are they going off together? And then Green Lantern's like, man, with 50 kinds of vision, you sure are blind.
Yeah.
I mean, even he knew. Okay, that's the one thing, too. There've been many times where, like, Batman sang Am I Blue to save
right.
Wonder Woman.
Miss Piggy.
And when she was just turned to Miss Piggy. And then, you know, the one with the Thanagarians. And then Wonder Woman keeps trying to get, you know, talking about Superman, Wonder Woman. Oh, the pig. It's the same episode with the piggy.
Okay.
When she was talking about dating.
Right.
With him. When Vandal Savage was going to marry a friend of hers, some kind of rich kid princess from a country, and she invited, they became like little BFFs, she and the girl, and they went to a fancy dress-up cocktail party, and Bruce Wayne was there, and, you know, he took her to dance.
Right.
Right? You know, it's just that many, many times that there have been romantic-ish things between the two of them. And they look good together. And yeah, she's like stronger, way stronger than he is.
And
the thing is that unless she really needs to assert herself, I don't think, okay, now, yeah, physically, yeah, Superman could totally beat her. Obviously.
Or at least go really toe-to-toe. Because she can give as good as she gets.
She can. She can, that's true. But I really think that if it came down to it, he could probably kill her if he really needed to. But the thing is that I don't think that she would want him. Because he's just boring, you know?
No, I agree. And I think when you mentioned that, is that is that Batman really needs to have, quote unquote, let his hair down every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I don't think I don't think any other character except for maybe Selina, which he would be somewhat at ease, or at least someone who would understand him,
mm-hmm.
would allow him to touch that side that is Bruce, not as Batman. Yeah. So,
and then of course there's been, you know, other alternate storylines,
mm-hmm.
you know, like in the New 52, he's banging her, right. You know, the kitty and the baddie get together.
There you go.
In other stories, there's been, like when Hush killed her,
mm-hmm.
and took her heart out, and they kept her alive until he was able to get it back, and she knew it was him. And then in the original Batman cartoon, you know, before they did the Justice League, but the other one with Tim Daly or something in it, he saved her, she saved him.
Mm-hmm.
There's, of course, obviously the Michael Keaton movie, The Bat and the Kitty, Michelle Pfeiffer.
No, I know. Michelle, but you know, Selena Kyle,
they had a thing together. There was a.
I mean, even Gotham had it's the exact same way.
And then, of course, you know, then in this stupid, sorry, but I really didn't like it in the Birds of Prey TV show,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Supposedly, the Huntress was their child.
Yeah, which was, you know? which was completely idiotic, but doesn't make a difference because I bought it outright because it was $13.
But there was another one. There was a cartoon, a comic version.
Yeah, I know.
Where it was their child.
Right.
You know, Catwoman and Batman had a child, and she became the Huntress.
Right.
And she and Supergirl or Wonder Girl, whatever, ended up getting sucked into some kind of strange place where they ended up on Krypton.
Right.
And things like that. But they were together. They were, because they're like best friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, doo-doo happens.
I know. That's what happens in the multiverse.
Dun, all right.
So, that's going to end the Wonder Woman podcast, finally. So, thank you, honey.
Hey.
Sharing your knowledge and dropping it all over me. Like hot plate of spaghetti.
You know? You had your spaghetti. Don't be regretty.
Shut up. All right. So, hopefully you guys are enjoying the final podcast for those three parts. Hopefully the next podcast is when I'm going to be talking with Mr. Gene, in which he and I will be reviewing Batman vs. Superman, The Dawn of Justice.
Bum, bum, bum.
Stop doing that. I'm going to kill you when you keep doing that.
You like it? Don't say you're going to kill me on the air. If I die, they're going to arrest you.
It's a podcast. I'll be delayed. Anyway, so again, you like what I'm doing with my origamis on the Monster Sci-Fi Show page on Instagram? There's some Batmans there, if you like. Make you one. How are you going to get one? Are you going to get one? Email me at themonstersci-fi show@gmail.com. Find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. Again, as I always say, thank you very much for listening for the Monster Sci-Fi Show. Sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.